It's our crest, our coat of arms, and what it means to wear it.
Binsky will take it, tap it ahead for Nudibara, out to the neutral zone, finding Foligno.
It's when we dig deep.
Foligno's got help on the rush.
At the right moment.
And he drops it back for Dubinsky, over to Savard. He shoots and scores!
It's our blue, and out of our blue, we rise.
Head to BlueJackets.com for tickets, news, and more.
Sports Desk at the Columbus Dispatch presents the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
With your host, Ohio State basketball beat writer Adam Jardy.
Now, the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is brought to you by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Hello, everyone. This is Adam Jardy from the Columbus Dispatch. Today is Monday, November 3rd, 2020. It's my official duty to welcome you into episode 167 of the Buckeye Extra Men's Basketball Podcast. Welcome to Jubilation City. Welcome to Game Week. Welcome to the Jardy minivan. Welcome to everything. I am recording this roughly about 3 feet away from the spot where I plunged through my drywall floor, my attic above my garage last Thursday, landing on the hard, unforgiving concrete floor that is my garage, and spent a couple of hours in urgent care, and thankfully no worse for the wear. A couple of bruised ribs and a banged up shoulder and some pretty gnarly looking scratches, but first time I've really been back out here looking at the scene of the crime. There's still a piece of drywall literally hanging from my garage ceiling, so it's been an interesting couple of days, but that hasn't stopped all the coverage coming out. The season waits for no man, and we're all making it through, and we're roughly 36 40 odd hours away from Ohio State officially opening the season, or at least that's what we're hoping for. We'll talk about it. But since we last spoke, in addition to plummeting through my ceiling, I've had stories published after interviewing EJ Liddell and Kyle Young. And by the time you listen to this podcast, there will be a story up on BuckeyeExtra.com looking at Jimmy Sotos and what life has been like for him, learning about the waiver, how practice changed for him once he found out that it had finally been approved, and what to expect from him this season. So that story will be up on it'll be up Tuesday morning on Buckeye Extra. These are all exclusive interviews that I've been able to get during the pandemic, during this preseason here, where we've had no in-person media access. But we're at the Dispatch, I mean, we're committed to our Ohio State men's basketball coverage and been able to devote the time and the resources and the energy to this stuff. And I hope they're helping get ready for the season. It's been a lot of fun to check in with guys and to sort of just test the waters every couple of days or so, just to check in with somebody and see how things are going. So all those stories are up on BuckeyeExtra.com. You'll also see leading into Wednesday, you'll have our annual keys to the season, which is just sort of a little analytical piece with like this player's on the spot and the Buckeyes go dancing if, and like a season prediction and all that stuff. That will be up soon, as well as pretty lengthy piece with one question for each player. And that's going to be the second segment of this podcast here, because it ended up being fairly long print wise to just to find a way to discuss 14 players. It takes up a lot of space very quickly. So some things had to get cut out of the paper, out of the print version, the online version. But we'll run down each player on the roster here in the second segment of the podcast. So we look at each player and we'll ask what's the most pressing question for each guy. But most recently, though, head coach Chris Holtmann held a Monday afternoon Zoom teleconference to preview the start of the season. Normally, we would have an interview session with Holtmann and one or two players. But like right now, that just kind of this is the best that we can do. And I do want to say right off the top here, I want to give a shout out to the people over at the Sports Information Department at Ohio State, because it's not been discussed on here. I've not written about it, but they... that is a full-time job working over there. There's obviously 36 sports at Ohio State. It requires a significant staff in order to make all of that happen. And for the better part of a good month and a half, maybe 2 months now, and scheduled to last until the end of the year, Ohio State has been operating with three people in that department. And the university has reassigned everybody else to other parts in the university to relieve the financial burden on the athletic department for all the money that's been lost due to the coronavirus pandemic. So I say all that to say that they've had a very skeleton crew have to step up and try to get all these things to work and to figure out media protocols and how games are supposed to happen and helping with setting up interviews. And they've been fantastic to work with. And I have to send my heartfelt appreciation to those who are continuing to put in the good fight over there and helping me do my job better. And also to send my best wishes to everyone who would normally be doing that, who is currently reassigned. And I hope to see everybody back at their posts before long. And hopefully by the end of the season, we're all looking back on all the weirdness that is surrounding the beginning of the college football season, college basketball season, rather, football too. But hopefully we're all looking back on this and we can all have a good laugh at it come like March or April. But anyway, Chris Holtmann had a Monday afternoon Zoom teleconference, and a lot of the conversation was a little bit just more general. And frankly, some of that's just that we've hit that point where there's not a lot of things to talk about without getting to see things or see competition, or without them just even getting to play anybody else. There's been no secret scrimmage. There's been no exhibitions. It's just been 29 practices. I'm assuming they practiced today, and I'm assuming we talked to Holtmann before it. So I'm assuming they're at 30 practices as of this recording of just going against each other. And that obviously gets to be kind of tiring, and it makes it hard to draw some conclusions. So there's an element of mystery that every college basketball team is going to face going into the start of the season, because we have nothing to compare anybody against until they actually get out and start playing games. So the thing that I thought was most interesting out of the press conference on Monday was I asked what needs to happen between this press conference and the 2 p.m. tip on Wednesday against Illinois State to ensure that the game happens. So I asked that to Chris Holtmann, and it turns out the one positive test will result in the cancellation of the game. He said, quote, both teams need to have clean tests these next couple of days. My understanding is if there's a positive test, the game will not happen. Understanding that in non-conference, that's the risk you take. That if there's a positive test, the game won't happen. But we're optimistic that because of the regular testing that's happening, we'll be in good shape. The NCAA has mandated that during the season, everyone must be tested at least 3 times per week in order to play. In the Big Ten, teams are tested daily, but it's, they say daily, it's 6 days per week. And the protocols for canceling a league game as opposed to a non-league game are different for that reason. A number of teams from the Missouri Valley League were testing for COVID just once per week during the summer and the fall, and that's where Illinois State plays. And Holtmann said that as far as I understand right now, because teams are under different testing protocols, that is really a non-conference decision as far as one positive test canceling the game. He said conference games will be different because we're in regular testing as a program ourselves. I don't believe that would necessarily mean our game would be off if we had one positive test on our side. I think it all involves contact tracing and eliminating the spread and the concern about that. So these are things that the Ohio State has had lengthy communications with every non-conference opponent this season, as far as this is what it's going to take to play the game. This is how it's going to work. So Illinois State will arrive in Columbus on Tuesday, and they'll be tested. And if they're all negative, then they can practice. And then they'll be tested again on Wednesday morning. And if they're all negative, then the game happens. And we have been seeing plenty of games being canceled here in the last several days. And it's hard to keep the big picture in mind that there are 357 Division I men's basketball programs, and it's a lot to have 20 or 30 teams shut down, but percentage wise, it's not. So it feels very much at times like the world is falling and like, what are we even doing here? But Ohio State remains confident it's going to have a game on Wednesday. And as of now, there's nothing that seems to indicate otherwise. So we just kind of, there's going to be a lot of breath holding this season. There's going to be a lot of just wait and see. And this is our first taste of it. So the games will look different. As of last Friday, Ohio State announced that no fans will be allowed to attend, including family members, for at least 28 days because the numbers continue to go up. Holtmann said he talked to his players about the impact of that decision. And then he said he felt like he had just gotten the news like right before practice. He revisited it with them the next day because he realized that like it really affected some guys, and they had to have some conversations about that. So that's an important change. Players on the bench will have their seats spread out. I saw some pictures from, I think it was Louisville today, where they have like plexiglass up like around the bench. It almost reminded me of like a hockey team bench, and like almost like penalty boxes for where the players will be sitting. Just trying to spread things out and try to keep people as safe as possible. It's going to be, I'm still trying to picture what it's going to be like sitting in Value City Arena on Wednesday, watching Ohio State play a basketball game with nobody else in the stands, except a limited number of media. And just trying to picture what that's going to sound like, what that's going to feel like. I know that it'll be leading into a holiday and people aren't going to be checking their computers or their, you know, the web, maybe quite as much. We're spending, hopefully spending time at home and not letting this thing spread any worse. But you'll see usually web traffic goes significantly down, but I'm going to have a lot of content coming out of that Wednesday game just about the experience of it and what it was like and how Ohio State adapted. Holtman said there's going to be a lack of connectivity you're going to have to fight. He said, I think the enthusiasm and energy in the building is all going to be created by your group. He said, that's going to be something important, both at home and on the road. Now, at this moment, the only Ohio State player who is definitively out for the season opener is Seth Towns. Holtman said he's making progress. He said, I couldn't tell you right now when we think he'll be ready to go in game action, but he has done more in practice the last couple of weeks. We've begun to add him into some live action, but I couldn't give you a timeline right now. Now, Musa Diallo, who had two ankle surgeries last season and took a medical redshirt, could play. Holtman said, quote, he'll be a game time decision. He's making progress. We've been able to get him in more live work, but ultimately it'll be a game time decision in terms of his availability and the amount of minutes we feel comfortable he can play. So that's progress there. Hopefully we can see Musa on the court on Wednesday, which would be good because, like I said, missed all last season. So those were the most like newsworthy things to come out of Holtman's press conference on Monday. We'll revisit a few other topics that he addressed briefly in the third segment of the podcast here. But first, I want to remind you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast, and that way you won't miss an episode. If you subscribe, you're always in the loop. If you would, 5-star ratings and nice comments are sincerely appreciated. I would be planning to do a podcast Wednesday evening, but I realize with the holiday, it would be one. I don't want to ask Patrick or anyone on our website to have to work on a podcast when it's Thanksgiving. It just doesn't seem fair, and I'm not capable of editing my own podcast. So the plan right now is. Look for a pod. I'm recording this podcast right now. Look for one Sunday night recording. So it'll be available Monday morning because Ohio State will play Wednesday and will also play Sunday. So you'll have a nice, beefy, meaty podcast for you on Monday morning to recapping the first two games of the season and what we've learned from Ohio State to that point. So up next, we're going to do a flyover of the roster. But first, at Rosati Windows, staying competitive is really pretty easy because everything they do is personally inspected and done locally right here in Columbus, Ohio. They're a one-stop shop from the sales force to manufacturing of your windows in their 60,000 square foot facility to the installers and then the follow-up inspections. Keeping it local and adding the personal touch, that's what has people consistently recommending Rosati Windows to their neighbors, family, and friends. All right, so let's take a look at this roster and let's address one question for each player that could see time for Ohio State this season. And we'll just take these in alphabetical order. So this is what I came up with, and a version of this will appear on Buckeye Extra, but thought this might make for some good talking points on here too. So we'll start off with Justin Arns. And my question was, is he ready to be an everyday guy? We've seen it at times. We've seen it through his first two seasons where he can change a game. He had that 29-point outburst against Illinois his freshman season, and he had huge shots against Northwestern and Indiana, or huge games rather, last season that really helped turn the 2019-2020 season around. You think about how things were not going well. They went to Northwestern and they eked out that win. Then they came home, they beat Indiana. Things started to really level off from there. And Justin Arns was a big part of that. Thing is, though, he's never averaged more than 10 minutes a game for a season. So on a team that is replacing its two most accurate three-point shooters, is he capable of at least doubling his playing time in order to get his shooting ability on the court? Gene Brown III, the freshman, can he do enough offensively? So Gene is versatile, and I keep hearing that from the coaching staff that he's going to have a role on this team, that he's going to do some things that are going to help Ohio State as a freshman. He's 6'6", 195, plays the wing position, sort of a 3-2 maybe, so he can guard multiple spots, and I think they like the potential for him to be able to switch defensively on ball screens, which is just more and more important, it seems, with every season. And they really like his talent, his athleticism, and they're really big on his upside. But offensively, he's a little bit behind from what I've gathered. And I think there are some concerns there about what he's going to be able to do with the ball at that end of the court. It's not a position where there's an easy path for playing time. There's a couple of guys ahead of him that are more experienced and are more polished. So he's not likely to carve out a significant role. But can he show enough offense to start stealing minutes from some of his more experienced teammates? Ibrahima Diallo, the big man, the sophomore, is he capable of assuming a role? Simply put, there's nobody else in the roster who brings Diallo's frame. I mean, he's 6'10", 220. He's not the heaviest player on the team, but he is the biggest player on the team. But you look at what we saw from him last season. He played 4 minutes in Big Ten games, which was less than senior walk-on Danny Hummer. He came to Ohio State as a work in progress. Everybody knew him as a work in progress. The hope was that he'd be able to fulfill some sort of role, you know, in a year or two, And this is obviously when that clock starts to tick. With Caleb Wesson gone, there's not a true big body, I even hesitate to call Caleb a center because of how much he shot from the perimeter last year. But there's no natural five on this roster, it seems to me, except Ibrahima Diallo. So the question is, can he play 8 to 10 minutes a game as a backup? Can you put him in with 10 minutes to, or, you know, at the midway point of a half and have him get you to the under 8 timeout without picking up a bunch of fouls or giving up a bunch of buckets or hurting you offensively? We don't know that about Diallo yet, but we got to figure that out. Ohio State has to figure that out, rather, because nobody thinks he's going to be a featured part of the plans just yet. But they're going to need him to hold down some sort of role this year. Harrison Hookfin. Now, it's interesting. I think it's a commentary on our current situation as far as why you would even include a walk-on into a write-up like this. Because in a normal year, there's nothing to really say. It's just, can he do well in practice? But this season, can he play? I mean, it's the most basic of questions. He's played 22 minutes in 9 appearances since he walked onto the team in the middle of the 2018-2019 season. But this is going to be a season where you're going to have guys missing. You're going to have contact tracing is going to impact rosters. Positive tests are going to impact rosters. If there was ever a season where you would say that a walk-on had a legitimate chance to have to hold down important minutes at some point in the season, this might be it. So can Harrison Hookfin do that for Ohio State? Musa Diallo, how quickly can he knock off the rust? Mentioned him at the top of the podcast. He's still making his way back from a reconstructive ankle surgery that he had midseason, which came after an arthroscopic ankle procedure he had during the preseason. So he hasn't played for the last year, and it's held him back as well, like going through preseason and going through offseason workouts. It's just things he's not been able to do. When he's healthy, he's proven himself. He's one of the most athletic and versatile players that they have. The guy can jump out of the gym. He's just incredibly fun to watch when he just uses his natural talents on the court. But the progression has been delayed by the ankle surgeries. He hasn't consistently been able to put together offensive performances that could keep him on the court. Other guys have outplayed him at that end, which has helped hamper some of his playing time. And he's averaged 2.7 points in 68 games, including 23 starts. But he did graduate a year early. So he's now a junior. He's a fourth year junior, but he's in his third season of playing, which is where he would have been had he not graduated early. So I think you can expect the game to slow down a little bit for him and for him to be a little bit more polished overall, just from an experience standpoint. But what can he do jumping right in after a long layoff? Because I think that you could really use his versatility. They could use his handle. You could definitely do some things to help them at the two. And they're going to need more bodies there for sure. Michi Johnson Jr., not even on the team yet, but is he ready for a role? As we've discussed on here a lot recently, he's a surprise addition to the roster, graduating high school a year early, reclassifying to the 2020 class, and he's going to join the Buckeyes in December after missing his entire junior year with a torn ACL on his right knee. So he's got a lot to acclimate to. When he gets to campus, he's going to have to go through comprehensive physical and medical evaluations and obviously COVID testing and quarantine and lots of things before he can even start practicing consistently with the team. So all that aside, I mean, if he had played all last season, it would still be a little bit tough to project exactly what kind of impact he's going to make. And then you add in on all of the other things. And again, makes sense why he's making this move. He will still be a freshman next year. This year is a bonus for him. But he's only going to be one of four true guards on the roster when he arrives on campus. And the experience he gains will be valuable for next season. But what can he give this year's team? Freshman Zed Key. Can he avoid foul trouble? He's going to play. I've heard that Zed has already passed Diallo on the depth chart as it is at the center position, and he's going to have a role on this team. That's tough as a freshman to slot into the rotation at center. And Key's the heaviest player on the roster. He's listed at 6'8", 245. So if you think about it, he's like 2 inches shorter than Diallo and 25 pounds heavier. So he's going to have to play some important minutes for Ohio State. He's a truly gifted post scorer and has a potential to grow into like an all-conference type of player. But we just don't know, like, how is he going to handle stepping into a role right off the bat? I've heard that he's the odds-on favorite to lead the team in fouls this year, which is common for a big man who's a freshman. We saw it with Caleb. You see it with it's just an adjustment process. It's something he's going to have to battle through. So can he adjust to that tempo of the college game quickly enough to stay on the court for long stretches of time? EJ Liddell, the sophomore. What kind of jump can he make? Hopefully you read my story on EJ that published over the weekend on Buckeye Extra. But you look at the numbers, and as a freshman, he averaged 6.7 points and 3.8 rebounds, but really started to come on the last 9-10 games of this season. His minutes are going to go up significantly, and he's one of the favorites to assume a starting spot as a sophomore. I think he's probably going to be in that starting lineup on Wednesday. That's all going to result in increased production, especially if he can keep improving his conditioning and can play harder for longer stretches of time. That's one thing that him and I talked about a lot. Even him talking about how he was doing some of the boxing workouts that Caleb was doing last season after games. Said he's got a pretty mean right hook. Said Mike Tyson's his favorite boxer. So I think they're asking him to extend his game to the perimeter. They want him to shoot some threes. They want him to do more. But I think it's a little bit much to project him to become the go-to guy as a sophomore when he had a couple of really good flashes as a freshman, but it wasn't a consistent all-season-long dominating performance from him. And now they're asking him to expand his role. So can he cement himself as a consistent go-to player? That's the big question for me as far as EJ Liddell. Now, Jimmy Sotos, now is he ready to step it up a notch? So he's proven himself to be a really important player on a Bucknell team that averaged 20 wins a game or 20 wins a season during his 3 years there. He brings above average shooting and passing abilities, but he hasn't really had to do a ton against high major competition. Of those 100 games, I looked on KenPom.com, and they'll classify games as tier A, tier B, and then just like nothing. So he's only had 10 games in those 100 games against tier A competition. His numbers are decent, but he hasn't had to do that on a night-by-night basis. And it's interesting as well that he began the preseason ticketed for the scout team and was fully prepared to have a season where he could learn, where he could develop, where he could grow, and then the waiver gets approved, and now he's thrust into a role where he's probably going to play 20 minutes a game. So that's a lot to kind of process in a short period of time. Can he handle a role of 20 minutes a game and come in and keep the offense moving, make a few shots, get guys the ball? Can he do that in a conference like the Big Ten? Justice Suing, can he be the guy? Can he shoulder the load? He was the best player on a bad Cal team. We've talked about that on here. Obviously, he missed time last season with a foot injury, but he's fully healthy, and I think he is one of the two most likely players to be Ohio State's leading scorer this season. There's been a lot of talk. He needs to work on his defense, and that's something that he's been receptive to, something that Chris Holtman even said on Monday, that he appreciates the fact that Justice has to work on his defense, and he's willing to do that. That's a big step, not just knowing that you have to do it, but like embracing it and accepting that. So I think you'll see some improvement there. He's got great size. He's physical. He gets to the rim. He can shoot. He's going to be a legitimate option to lead this team in scoring. The question just is similar to Jimmy Sotos. Can he do it in the Big Ten? Because he's going to be going as bigger teams, stronger teams, better scouting. He's going to have to do a lot for this Ohio State team. So what does that look like? I'm very excited to watch Justice Suing on Wednesday. Now, the other transfer, Seth Towns, graduate transfer from Harvard, local kid. When does he get back to his old self? And that's the million-dollar question. So he was the top grad transfer on the market. He's a proven top flight player. He still has 2 years of eligibility remaining. There's a lot of things to really like about a healthy Seth Towns, and you picture what he could bring to this team and how he can stretch defenses, his shooting ability, his size, his passion for the game, his love of Ohio State. There's a lot there to really like about what it's going to ultimately be when Seth Towns puts on the Scarlet and Gray and is able to play. He's just not quite there yet. So when he does play, which it sounds like it's going to be sometime maybe December, January-ish, he can be a big-time player. But will Ohio State fans get to see that this year? And I think it's a fair question, given that he's missed the last two seasons. There's going to be some rust there, and it's going to take some time for him to get back to where he was. And so it's obviously still an exciting pickup. I still think he plays a major role in this team. But I think if Seth Towns was healthy, I certainly would have picked Ohio State higher in my preseason media poll. And I think there'd be even more buzz about this Ohio State team, because that's just a really big question mark hanging over this team right now. When will Ohio State get to see a healthy Seth Towns? CJ Walker, how far can he lead this team? When you think about the guards we've seen in the Big Ten the last couple of years, or maybe just last year, and you think about like not having a Cassius Winston anymore or a Xavier Simpson anymore, and how important those guys were to their teams, that's CJ Walker on this team. And we really saw him come into his own once DJ Carton left the team last year, and it was all CJ's show, basically. I mean, he was the point guard, He wasn't looking over his shoulder. He could really settle in. His offense improved. His turnovers went down. He just became an overall more confident looking player. And his teammates seem to really, really feed off of that. I think he clearly possesses innate leadership abilities that make people want to follow him. Holman, if you talk to him about C.J. Walker, I mean, he'll gush about that guy like it's one of his own children. I mean, he really, really likes C.J. Walker. So there's room for improvement, obviously, like I said, with his shooting. He turned the ball over too much during the first half of last season. But I think that this team's going to go as far as C.J. can take it, because you need experience, you need metal, you need grit, all those things that you want out of a point guard. C.J. Walker's got it. But can he lead Ohio State into the upper echelon of the Big Ten this year? Dwayne Washington Jr. There's a couple ones here, but I went with, can his production grow alongside his efficiency? We know E.J. likes to score. We know We know that Dwayne likes to score. We know that he's good at scoring. We know that he can score in bunches, and he's very much capable of carrying an offensive load for a team during the course of a game. But we also know that he likes to shoot, and that's occasionally gotten him a quick hook or that look from Chris Holtmann that he described as like he can stare right through your soul. This season, he's probably going to lead the team in scoring. He's my pick for Ohio State's leading scorer, but he's got to do it while not merely being a volume shooter. Chris Holtmann said on Monday on the teleconference that we had that his defense is still a little bit of a work in progress, as well as his decision making. But he said they've really challenged him to improve on his 2-point field goal percentage. Because if you think about last year, there'd be a number of times he'd pass up a shot, or he might drive and end up with a contested off balance like throw at the rim that wouldn't go in. He can't do that this year. He's got to get better shots, better high percentage shots. He's going to be at the top of every team's scouting report. They're going to be taking things away from him. There's going to be a lot of adjustments that he's going to have to make. And he needs to do that while also being more efficient. So can he score more but shoot less? And then finally, at the end of the alphabet, and it's weird how many of these guys have, when you rank the team alphabetically, how low you get into the alphabet and how you stay down there. But Kyle Young, can he be a serviceable shooter? So for the last two seasons, I've kept track through the early going of how, if Kyle had stayed healthy, he would have had a chance to challenge for the single season shooting percentage record in Ohio State history. He just gets a lot of high percentage shots right around the rim. The only question would have been, could he have gotten enough shots? Because the offense didn't necessarily flow through him. It was either tip dunks or alley-oops or just hustle plays, the ways that he's really excelled in his career. But this year, they need him to do that, but they've talked about trying to have the offense flow through him on occasion, making him a little bit more of a go-to player and a featured component in the offense. And some of that will involve trying to stretch his game to the three-point line. And I think we're going to see this more and more, given how successful Ohio State was with having Caleb shoot the three last. And that's a testament to how hard Caleb Wesson worked to develop that outside shot. But they need Kyle Young, and they need E.J. Liddell to be capable of knocking down a three or two per game to help stretch defenses and to help keep teams honest. And they're both guys that neither of them are prototypical centers. So if they're going to play that spot, you got to try to force that mismatch on the other end. And that can happen by dragging that big guy out to the three-point line. And if they're going to honor that shot, it's going to make things work easier for a lot of other parts of the offense. So will Kyle Young be able to make threes at a high enough percentage to force teams to honor his shot? Now I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to grab a drink of water. I kind of lost my voice there for half a second. And we'll be back with a few more thoughts from Holtmann, as well as some other news and notes. So a few more things from Holtmann's press conference before they're completely irrelevant, because there's a short shelf life sometimes for quotes. And right now, questions like this, like, what do you see from the center position? He said, quote, it's hard to put a definitive number on minutes. What I will say is I think both Zed and Ibrahima will play minutes at that position, and both guys need to be ready to go. Obviously, Kyle and EJ, those four guys will play minutes at that position, but I think some of it's going to depend on the game and matchups. We've seen some good things out of all the guys. Zed's done some good things. He continues to get in better shape. And as I mentioned before, I've heard that Diallo is fourth in that list, but they still are going to need him to play some minutes. And with COVID, we have no idea who might be available from one game to the next. So it's going to be important that he's ready to hold some sort of load for Ohio State. Holtmann was asked, is he anxious to learn about his guard depth? He said, I'm anxious to see a lot of things. We have a really good opponent. to where we're going to get to learn a lot about our group. Outside of Jimmy, is that Justin Arnes, Gene Brown? Who are we playing at some of those positions behind the one and the two? We've seen some good things in practice, but it's been against each other. I think we're very much a work in progress. Got guys who are playing new roles and different roles than they did last year. We certainly have some new guys that we're integrating into our rotation. And someone asked him as a follow-up, what about his previously stated concern for his team's ability to play defense? And Holtman said, quote, it's real. I think we diagnosed that early on as something we're going to be a challenge with this year. I think people forget how much growth Caleb took in that third year and how tremendous he was at covering up spots and protecting the rim. Different than what you would think of as a rim protector, but terrific at walling up, being in the right spots, talking the game. And his brother was terrific with it as well. The loss of those two guys presents a significant challenge for us. Our defensive numbers as a whole were really good last year. They weren't as great in league play. I think that's an area where we have to continue to get better in. And that's also an answer that didn't include any mention of Luther Muhammad, who was Ohio State's best on-ball defender. So they really do lose some important pieces on that defense. Now, Ohio State did post a clip on Monday to social media. It's about 29 seconds of some highlights from what appeared to be the scrimmage that they held last Saturday, where they did the whole game day experience, film, scouting report, pregame meal, jerseys, warmups, referees, the whole nine yards. And they did a pretty good job of splicing in different clips, so you can't really tell necessarily who's on one team or who's on the other. I did ask Chris Holtman on Monday on his teleconference if he knew a starting lineup, and he said, yeah, but I couldn't get, or he said, I couldn't give it to you right now. Actually, I could, but I'm not. So I think he has a pretty good idea who the starting lineup is. You would hope, actually, I mean, 2 days before the start of the season, you would like to have those positions hammered down. So I was able to tell in one drill, a 5-on-5, two lineups here, and you had C.J. Walker, Justice Suing, Justin Arnes, E.J. Liddell, and Zed Key going against Jimmy Sotos, Dwayne Washington Jr., Gene Brown, Kyle Young, and Ibrahima Diallo. I expect starting lineup on Wednesday to be C.J. at the 1, Dwayne at the 2, Justice, I guess, at the 3, Kyle at the 4, and E.J. at the 5, or maybe E.J. at the 4 and Kyle at the 5, but I expect you're going to see those 5 on the court when the game starts. And probably not as a coincidence, in the short clip of a couple of highlights, you saw clips of both Kyle Young and E.J. Liddell hitting threes. So something to keep in mind there. We got some national perspectives on Ohio State and where they might fit into the Big Ten this year. ESPN put out its projections for the Big Ten, and Ohio State was a consensus fifth pick. They had four of their writers pick Myron Medcalf, Jeff Borzello, and Joe Lenardi have them fifth, and John Gasway had Ohio State fourth. And then there was a Big Ten title odds per at Wii Sports Betting. Ohio State given 12-1 odds to win the Big Ten, which was fifth best, behind Iowa at 5-2 and Wisconsin at 5-2, and then Illinois and Michigan State at 4-1. And Ohio State next. Michigan was 14-1, Indiana 16-1. But that has set another poll there. You've got Ohio State projected fifth in the Big Ten. And in the media poll, Ohio State was picked seventh. So it's interesting to me that some of the national people seem to be maybe a little bit higher on where this Ohio State team is going to finish this season than some of the people that just covered like teams within the Big Ten. So we'll keep an eye on that. I want to give a shout out to Jayshon Tate and what is reportedly a 3-year deal with the Houston Rockets. And you want to talk about a guy who has earned it. I mean, I think about the journey that Jayshon went through from graduating from Ohio State, getting a look on an NBA summer league roster, breaking the pinky finger on his hand so he couldn't play, signing in Belgium, busting his butt over there on a trial contract, earning a full-time contract, having a great season, coming back, getting another G League or a summer league opportunity. Earthquake canceled the game that he was supposed to play in, played well, but like lost a few opportunities because of that. Goes to Australia. Has a great season in Australia, gets back from Australia, is supposed to have some opportunities lined up with some NBA teams for some workouts. COVID hits. He's not able to obviously have those workouts. He was scheduled to play in TBT for Andrew Dokic's Big X team, but he actually contracted COVID in the spring and tested positive and was unable to participate. Would have had a chance, I think, to maybe make an NBA roster to help someone in the NBA bubble, but they would not. They by league rule, they couldn't take players who had been overseas. just to try to preserve the bubble. So that became a non-option for him. But word got out late last week. There's a story about it in the paper in Houston. So look for an interview and a story on Jayshon imminently. It should be up hopefully Tuesday afternoon. So congrats to Jayshon, man. I'm very excited to see what he's going to do in the league. We also got some good news on last Friday here. We got a new EP by Rilo Kiley. And by new, I mean it's actually like the first thing the band ever recorded. I've been a big Rilo Kiley fan for a long time. And I've always been in search of this first EP they put out that had, there's a couple different versions of it, 8 or 9 songs, but they were like self-produced and incredibly rare. I mean, if you found one, they went for hundreds of dollars, and they finally decided to re-release it so everybody could have it. So I'm glad I didn't end up chucking out $400 to buy this record like 3-4 years ago, because now I was able to purchase it at Spoonful Records in downtown Columbus for $22, and it's fun. It's really good, and I really like that band. One of those that you wish they would have stuck around more and made some more music, but I really, really like Jenny Lewis's solo stuff as well. But yeah, give Rilo Kiley a listen. And also, we get a Liam Gallagher song on the 27th, so, you know, I got to admit, it's getting better. It's getting better all the time. Now I'm going to get out of here. So as always, you can send along your questions, your comments, your love notes, your hate mail, and otherwise constructive criticism to me at Adam Jardy on Twitter or ajardy@dispatch.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Patrick Flaherty, the Podfather, for stitching this all together and pushing it out to all of you via the interwebs. Like I said, I'll be back. I'll record something Sunday night, so you can look for it next Monday. Please take care of yourselves during the holiday. Please stay safe. Let's try to get through this and try to keep this thing from spreading any worse. And before long, we've got vaccines on the horizon. I'm getting more and more confident that maybe I'm going to get to go to a concert next summer. And who knows, maybe when the Big Ten or when the NCAA is playing the whole tournament in Indianapolis, we can all be there and watching Ohio State make a run through the NCAA tournament. So let's cross our fingers that that's the direction that we're all headed as a country. So until then, thanks.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is made possible by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra Podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.